Chapter 5 The World According to Cat. We may easily overlook the simple fact that cats live in a world that is, subjectively speaking, quite distinct from ours. We share just enough overlap between our different perceptions of the world to be able to relate to one another, each species having evolved its senses to fit its lifestyle. It is unreasonable to consider cats' abilities as inferior or superior to our own. Biologists abandoned the idea of one species being superior to another decades ago, though cat owners may suspect that their cats feel otherwise. We now consider each species as having evolved to fit a particular way of life. Cats are good at being cats because their ancestors evolved sense organs and brains to suit that role. Because the domestication of the cat is still incomplete, that role is still in a state of flux. For example, cats are still adapting to urban living, while their sense organs have remained more or less unchanged. One major difference between cats and people is that cats have evolved genetically from wild to domestic, while over the same timescale, we ourselves have evolved culturally from hunter-gatherer to city-dweller. Genetic evolution is a much slower process than cultural evolution, and the 4,000 years over which cats have adapted to live alongside humankind is not long enough for any major change in sensory or mental abilities. Thus, cats today have essentially the same senses, the same brains, and the same emotional repertoire as their wildcat forebears. Not enough time has passed for them to break free of their origins as hunters. As far as we know, all that has changed in their brains is a new ability to form social attachments to people, while their senses remain completely unaltered. Some cat behavior seems baffling to us, but it may stem from their ability to sense things around them to which we are oblivious, and vice versa. A complete understanding of cats requires that we try to visualize the world they live in, which is a world quite different from what our own instincts tell us it should be. Indeed, I use the word visualize because that's how our imaginations work. We conjure pictures in our heads of past events or of what might happen in the future. Scientists doubt that cats' brains work that way. Not only is it unlikely that their brains are capable of such time travel, but also their world, unlike ours, is not based on appearance. Smell is at least as important to cats as vision is, so even if they could imagine, they might well conjure what something smells like rather than what it looks like. A few humans can do this, professional perfumers and sommeliers, for example, but usually only after extensive training. This fundamental emphasis on other senses is not the only difference in the way cats and humans perceive the world. Each of our individual senses also works differently too, so that, for example, a cat and a person looking out of the same window will see two dissimilar pictures. Human eyes and cat eyes share some similarities. We're both mammals after all, but cat eyes have evolved as super efficient aids to hunting prey. The wild ancestors of the modern cat needed to maximize the time they could spend hunting, so their eyes enabled them to see in the merest glimmer of light. This has affected the structure of cats' eyes in several ways. First, they are huge in comparison with the size of their heads. Indeed, their eyes are almost the same actual size as our own. In darkness, their pupils expand to 3 times the area ours do. The efficiency with which their eyes capture light is further enhanced by a reflective layer behind the retina known as the tapetum. Any incoming light that misses the receptor cells in the retina bounces off the tapetum and back through the retina again, where some will happen to strike a receptor cell from behind, enhancing the sensitivity of the eye by up to 40%. Any light that misses the second time around will pass back out through the pupil, giving the cat its characteristic green eye shine whenever a light is shone into its eyes in the dark. The receptor cells on the retina are also arranged differently from ours. They fall into the same 2 basic types, rods for black and white vision in dim light and cones for color vision when it's bright. But cats' eyes have mainly rods, whereas ours have mainly cones. Instead of each rod connecting to a single nerve, cats' rods are first connected together in bundles. As a result, cats' eyes have 10 times fewer nerves travelling between their eyes and their brains than ours. The advantage of this arrangement is that the cat can see in the near dark, when our eyes are nearly useless. The disadvantage is that in brighter light, cats miss out on finer details. Their brains are not being told precisely which rod is firing, only a general area on the retina onto which the light is falling. The result of this disadvantage is that in full daylight, cats cannot see as well as we can. The rods become overloaded, as ours do under the same conditions, and have to be switched off. The small number of cones that cats do have are spread all over their retinas, rather than concentrated in the center of the retina, in the fovea, as ours are. So they get a general and not very detailed picture of their surroundings during the day. Because their pupils are so large when wide open, they cannot be shrunk to a pinprick in bright sunlight as ours can. Instead, cats have evolved the ability to contract their pupils to narrow vertical slits, nearly a quarter of an inch wide, which protects their sensitive retinas from being overwhelmed with light. They can further reduce the amount of light entering by half-shutting their eyes, thereby covering the top and bottom of the slit and leaving only the center exposed. Cats also show little interest in color. Among mammals, color seems a uniquely primate, especially human, obsession. Footnote: birds, much more visual creatures than cats, see 4 colors, including ultraviolet, invisible to mammals of all kinds. End of note. Like dogs, cats have only 2 types of cones and see only 2 colors, blue and yellow. In humans, we call this red-green color blindness. To cats, both red and green probably look grayish. Footnote. At least, we know that people who are red-green colorblind see colors this way. A very small number of people also have 1 normal eye and 1 red-green colorblind eye, and can develop a normal vocabulary for color using their good eye, and then using that vocabulary to report what they see with only their colorblind eye open. End of note. Moreover, even colors they can distinguish seem to be of little relevance to them. Their brains contain only a few nerves dedicated to color comparisons, and it is difficult to train cats to distinguish between blue and yellow objects. Any other difference between objects, brightness, pattern, shape, or size, seems to matter more to cats than does color. Another drawback of having such large eyes is that they are not easy to focus. We have muscles in our eyes that distort the shape of the lens to allow close vision. Cats seem to have to move their whole lens back and forth, as happens in a camera, a much more cumbersome process. Perhaps because it is just too much effort, they often don't bother to focus at all, unless something exciting, such as a bird flying past, catches their attention. Close focus, anything nearer than about a foot away, is also out of the question with such large eyes. Furthermore, the muscles that focus the lens seem to set themselves according to the environment the cat grows up in. Outdoor cats are slightly long-sighted, whereas all indoor cats tend to be short-sighted. Despite the largeness of their eyes, cats can swivel them quickly to keep track of rapidly moving prey. To avoid image blurring, the eyes do not move smoothly, but in a series of jerks known as saccades, about a quarter of a second apart, so that the cat's brain can process each separate image clearly. Like humans, cats have binocular vision. The signals from each of their forward-facing eyes are matched up in their brains and are converted there into 3-dimensional pictures. Most mammalian carnivores have eyes that point forward to provide them with binocular vision so that they can judge precisely how far away potential prey is and judge their pounce accordingly. Presumably because their eyes don't focus any closer than about a foot away from their noses, cats don't bother to converge their eyes on objects any closer than this. Footnote: you can try this by placing a finger on the page of this book and then moving the finger a little way toward your nose while continuing to focus on the print. We can choose to fix our gaze on either the print or the finger, but if we had a cat's eyes at this distance, we would be unable to fix on the finger. End of note. To compensate, cats can swing their whiskers forward to provide a 3D tactile picture of objects that are right in front of their noses. Binocular vision is the best way of judging how far away something is, but it's not the only method available. Cats that lose an eye because of disease or injury can compensate by making exaggerated bobbing movements of their heads, monitoring how the images of the various objects they can see move relative to one another. Prey animals, such as rabbits, commonly do this. Because their eyes are on the sides of their heads to maximize surveillance, they have little or no binocular vision and have to rely on other, slightly cruder ways of judging distance. The cat's ability to detect tiny movements is another legacy of its predatory past. The visual cortex, the part of the brain that receives signals from the eyes, does not simply construct pictures as if the eyes were two still cameras. It also analyzes what has changed between one picture and the next. The cat's visual cortex compares these pictures 60 times each second, slightly more frequently than our visual cortex does, meaning that cats see fluorescent lights and older TV screens as flickery. Dedicated brain cells analyze movements in various directions, up and down, left to right, and along both diagonals, and even local brightening or dimming of specific parts of the image. Thus, the most important features of the image, the parts that are changing rapidly, are instantly singled out for attention. Cats learn how to integrate all this information when they are kittens, unlike amphibians, for example, which already have specialized prey detector circuits formed in their brains when they metamorphose from tadpole to adult. Cats use their movement detectors to behave flexibly when they're hunting, paying equal attention to a mouse it spots attempting to make an escape, or to a movement of the grass that betrays the mouse's position. Both help the hunting cat to find a meal. We can plainly see the cat's origins as a predator of small rodents in its remarkable hearing abilities, remarkable both in the range of sounds it can hear and in pinpointing the source of the sound. The cat's hearing range extends 2 octaves higher than ours into the region that, because we can't hear it, we refer to as ultrasound. This extended range enables cats to hear the ultrasonic pulses bats use to orient themselves while flying in the dark, and the high-pitched squeaks of mice and other small rodents. Cats can also tell different types of rodents apart by their squeaks. In addition to this sensitivity to ultrasound, cats can hear the same full range of frequencies we can, from the lowest bass notes to the highest treble. Almost no other mammal exhibits such a wide range, about 11 octaves in total. Because cats' heads are smaller than ours, their hearing range should be shifted to higher frequencies, so their ability to hear ultrasound is perhaps not all that remarkable. Rather, it's their ability to hear low notes that is unexpected. The cat's ability to hear sounds lower than it should, based on the size of its head, is possible because they have an exceptionally large resonating chamber behind the eardrum. The capacity to hear ultrasound, despite this, arises from a feature of this chamber not seen in other mammals. It divides into 2 interconnecting compartments, thereby increasing the range of frequencies over which the eardrum will vibrate. Mobile, erect ears are the cat's direction finders, essential when tracking a mouse rustling through the undergrowth. Cats' brains analyze the differences between the sounds reaching the right and left ear, enabling the cat to pinpoint the source. For lower-pitched sounds that fall into our hearing range, for example, when we talk to our cats, the sound arrives at one ear slightly out of sync with the other. Also, higher frequencies are muffled by the time they reach the ear farthest from the source, providing a further clue to where the source is. This is essentially the way that we too determine where a sound is coming from. But cats have an extra trick. The external parts of the ears are independently mobile and can be pointed at or away from the sound to confirm its direction. When it comes to ultrasounds that are above our hearing range, such as a mouse's squeak, the phase differences become too small to be useful, but the muffling effect gets larger and therefore becomes more informative. Therefore, a cat has little difficulty determining whether a sound is coming from the right or the left. In addition, the structure of their external ears, the visible part of the ears, technically referred to as pinnae, also enables cats to tell with some accuracy how high up the source of a sound is. First and foremost, the corrugations inside the pinnae add stiffness and keep the ears upright, but they also cause complex changes to any sound as it passes into the ear canal. These changes vary depending on how far above or below the cat the sound is coming from. Somehow the cat's brain decodes these changes, which must be difficult given that the pinnae may be moving. The pinnae are also directional amplifiers, but rather than being tuned to pick up mouse squeaks, they are especially sensitive to the frequencies found in other cats' vocalizations, enabling male cats to pick up the calls made by females as they come into season and vice versa. This is perhaps the only feature of the cat's ears not refined specifically for detecting prey. Cat's hearing is therefore superior to ours in many ways, but inferior in one respect: the ability to distinguish minor differences between sounds, both in pitch and intensity. If it was possible to train a cat to sing, it couldn't sing in tune. Bad news for Andrew Lloyd Webber. Human ears are outstanding at telling similar sounds apart, probably an adaptation to our use of speech to communicate, and within that, our ability to recognize subtle intricacies of intonation that indicate the emotional content of what we are hearing, even when the speaker is trying to disguise his or her voice. Such subtleties are probably lost on cats, although they do seem to prefer us to talk to them in a high-pitched voice. Perhaps gruff male voices remind them of the rumbling growl of an angry tomcat. As with hearing, the cat's sense of touch features refinements that help with hunting. Cats' paws are exceptionally sensitive, which explains why many cats don't like having their feet handled. Not only are a cat's pads packed with receptors that tell it what is beneath or between its paws, but the claws are also packed with nerve endings that enable the cat to know both how far each claw has been extended and how much resistance it is experiencing. Since wild cats generally first catch their prey with their forepaws before biting, their pads and claws must provide essential clues on the efforts the prey is making to escape. Cats' long canine teeth are also especially sensitive to touch, enabling the hunting cat to direct its killing bite accurately, sliding one of these teeth between the vertebrae on its victim's neck and killing it instantly and almost painlessly. The bite itself is triggered by special receptors on the snout and the lips, which tell the cat precisely when to open and then close its mouth. The cat's whiskers are basically modified hairs, but where the whiskers attach to the skin around the muzzle, they are equipped with receptors that tell the cat how far each whisker is being bent back and how quickly. Although cat's whiskers are not as mobile as a rat's, but a cat can sweep its whiskers both forward, compensating for long-sightedness when pouncing, and backward to prevent the whiskers from being damaged in a fight. Cats also have tufts of stiffened hairs just above the eyes, triggering the blink reflex if the eyes are threatened, and on the sides of the head and near the ankles. All of these, in tandem with the whiskers, enable cats to judge the width of openings they can squeeze through. Information gathered from these hairs help keep the cat upright, but the vestibular system in the inner ear contributes most to the cat's exquisite sense of balance. Unlike our other senses, balance operates almost entirely at the subconscious level, and we barely notice it until something causes it to malfunction, for example, motion sickness. Although the information that it produces is used more effectively, the cat's vestibular system is actually similar to ours. This system consists of 5 fluid-filled tubes. In each, sensory hairs on the inside detect any movement of the fluid, which occurs only when the cat's head twists suddenly. Because of inertia, the fluid doesn't move as quickly as the sides of the tube do, dragging the hairs to one side. If you're reading this with a cup of coffee in front of you, try gently rotating the cup. The liquid in the middle of the cup remains where it is. Three of the tubes are curved into half circles, aligned at right angles to one another, to detect movement in all three dimensions. In the other two, the hairs are attached to tiny crystals, which make the hairs hang downward under gravity, enabling the cat to know which way is up, and also how fast it is moving forward. One reason cats are agile is simply that they walk on four legs rather than two. Four legs need coordinating if they are to work effectively as a team, and the cat has two separate groups of nerves that do this. One group relays information about each leg's position to the other three without involving the brain. The other sends information to the brain for comparison with what the inner ear balance organ relates about the cat's position. More reflexes in the neck enable the cat to hold its head steady even when it is moving quickly over uneven ground, a necessity for keeping its eyes on its prey. When walking from place to place, cats pay close attention to where they are going. Because of their poor, close vision, they have little reason to look down at their front feet, so instead they look three or four paces ahead and briefly memorize the terrain in front, allowing them to step over any obstacles in their path. Scientists have recently determined that if a cat is distracted with a dish of tasty food while walking, it forgets what the ground in its path looks like and has to have another look before setting off again. In the experiment, researchers switched off overhead lights while the cat was distracted into looking to one side. It then had to feel its way gingerly forward, indicating that its view of the path had vanished from its short-term memory. However, if the cat was distracted after it had stepped over an obstacle with its front paws, and while the obstacle was right under its belly, it remembered that it should lift its hind paws when it started walking again, even after a 10-minute delay, and even if the obstacle, unbeknown to the cat, had been moved out of the way. Somehow the visual memory of the obstacle is converted from ephemeral to long-lasting by the simple act of stepping over it with the front feet. A cat's gravity-detecting system is most impressive when it either jumps voluntarily or accidentally slips and falls. Less than a tenth of a second after all 4 feet lose contact with a surface, the balance organs sense which way up the head is, and reflexes cause the neck to rotate so that the cat can then look downward toward where it will land. Other reflexes cause first the forelegs and then hind legs to rotate to point downward. All this happens in thin air, with nothing for the cat to push on. While the front legs are being rotated, they are tucked up to reduce their angular momentum, while the back legs remain extended. Then the front legs are extended while the back legs are briefly tucked up. Ice skaters use the same principle to speed up and slow down spins, simply by retracting and extending their arms and the spare leg. The cat also briefly curves its flexible back as it rotates, which further prevents the twist at the back end, cancelling out the twist at the front. Finally, all 4 legs extend in preparation for landing, while the back is simultaneously arched to cushion the impact. While this intricate mid-air ballet is happening, the cat could have already fallen as far as 10 feet. As such, it's possible for a short fall to injure the cat as much as, and possibly more than, a longer fall, if there is insufficient time for the cat to prepare itself for landing. If a cat falls out of a high-rise building or a tall tree, it has another trick available, forming a parachute by spreading all 4 legs out sideways before adopting the landing position at the last minute. Laboratory simulations suggest that this limits the falling speed to a maximum of 53 miles per hour. The tactic apparently allows some cats to survive falls from high buildings with only minor injuries. Like dogs, cats rely greatly on their sense of smell. Cats' balance, hearing, and night vision are all superior to our own, but it's in their sense of smell that they really outperform humans. Everybody knows that dogs have excellent noses, something humankind has made use of for millennia, and this prowess is located in part in their large olfactory bulbs, the part of the brain where smells are first analysed. Relative to their size, cats have smaller olfactory bulbs than dogs, but theirs are still considerably larger than ours. Although scientists have not studied the cat's olfactory ability in as much detail as the dog's, we have no reason to suppose that a cat's sense of smell is much less acute. Without a doubt, it is certainly much better than our own. Like those of dogs, the insides of cats' noses have far more surface area devoted to trapping smells than ours do, about 5 times as much. Indeed, it's Homo sapiens who appears particularly deficient in this respect. During the evolution of our primate ancestors, we seem to have traded most of our olfactory ability for the benefits of three-color vision, which evolutionists theorize enabled us to discriminate red ripe fruits and tender pink leaves from their generally less nutritious green counterparts. Cats' sense of smell is more or less typical of mammals, and dogs' is more acute than the average. As in most mammals, air passing into the nose is first cleaned, moistened, and warmed, if necessary, as it passes over skin supported on a delicate honeycomb of bones, the maxilloturbinals. The air then reaches the surface that extracts and decodes the odor, the olfactory membrane, which is supported on another bony maze, the ephmoturbinals. Because, unlike dogs, cats do not pursue their prey over long distances, their maxilloturbinals are not especially large. Dogs must sniff and run at the same time, and while they're doing this, their olfactory membranes are constantly at risk from damage by dust or dry or cold air. Cats' habit of sitting and waiting for their prey places much less strain on the air conditioning system in their noses. Nerve endings in the olfactory membrane trap the molecules that make up the smell. The tips of the nerves are far too delicate to come into contact with air themselves, so they are covered in a protective film of mucus through which the molecules pass. This film has to be very thin, otherwise the molecules would take several seconds to move from the airflow to the nerve endings. If this was the case, then the information conveyed by the odor would be out of date before the cat knew it was there. To facilitate a speedy response, the mucus has to be spread so thinly that the nerve endings become damaged from time to time. For example, they may dry out when they become temporarily exposed to the air, and they therefore regenerate about once a month. The other ends of the olfactory nerves are connected together in bundles of between 10 and 100 before transmitting their information to the brain. Cats have several hundred kinds of olfactory receptors, and the information arises from whichever of these has been triggered by the odor passing through the nose. Each bundle contains only nerves with the same kind of receptor to amplify the signal without muddling up the data it contains. In the brain, the input from the different receptors is compared to build up a picture of the odor in question. This system is unlike that of the eye, where images are built up by each section of the retina transmitting its information directly to the brain. The nose does not build up a two-dimensional image, as each eye does. As the cat breathes in, the air is swirled around so much in the nostrils that whatever receptor each odor molecule strikes is a matter of pure chance. It's even unclear whether, unlike their vision and hearing, cats can make any sense of the slightly different amounts of odor entering their left and right nostrils. Cats are probably capable of distinguishing among many thousands of different smells, so they cannot have one receptor dedicated to each one. Rather, cats deduce the character of each odor they encounter from which type of receptor is being stimulated, and by how much in comparison with other types. Although scientists do not yet know precisely how the resulting information is combined together in any species of mammal, the potential resolution of such a system is staggering. Consider that our brains can generate a million or so distinct colors from just three types of cones. Several hundred olfactory receptors must therefore have the capacity to discriminate among billions of different odors. Whether cats achieve this is difficult to say. We do not even know precisely how many different odors can be discriminated by our own noses, and we have only about one-third to half the number of receptor types cats have. Based on these extrapolations, the mammalian olfactory receptor system seems rather over-engineered, and science has not yet resolved why this might be. Suffice it to say that cats should theoretically be able to distinguish between more smells than it is likely to encounter in a lifetime. Scientists know little about how cats make use of their sensitive noses. Cats' most dramatic response is to the odor of catnip, but this seems to be an aberration. Listen to the section, Catnip and Other Stimulants, at the end of this chapter. We know a great deal about the olfactory capabilities of dogs, because we have harnessed dogs' noses for various purposes, finding game, tracking fugitives, and detecting contraband, to name but three. If cats were as easy to train as dogs are, we'd probably discover that their olfactory performance is close to that of dogs. A few minutes' cursory observation of any cat will reveal that it sniffs its surroundings all the time, confirming that it places a premium on what things smell like. Remarkably, however, it was only in 2010 that the first scientific account of cats using olfaction in hunting was published. This study showed that cats do indeed locate prey using their scent marks. Many of the rodents that cats hunt, especially mice, communicate with one another using scent signals carried in their urine. As mammals, the noses of cats and mice work in much the same way, so it is highly unlikely that mice can disguise their scent marks so that cats cannot detect them. Australian biologists proved this by collecting samples of sand from mouse cages and placing it on the ground on roadside verges. Almost all these patches of sand were visited by predators, mostly foxes, but tracks of feral cats were also apparent, while clean sand was not. The collected data did not show how far away the cats had travelled from, but it is possible that significant distances were involved. That is, the cats probably navigated upwind toward the odour sources rather than only investigating the patches of sand because they looked unusual. We know that many dogs prefer to hunt using their noses and can detect and then locate sources of odour from hundreds of feet away. While cats prefer to use vision when hunting in daylight, they probably switch to using their sense of smell when hunting at night, when sight, even their sensitive night vision, becomes less reliable. Finding prey from the odours it produces can be difficult. Scent marks rarely indicate the current position of the animal that left them, only where it was when it made the mark, perhaps hours earlier. In the sand experiment, the urine samples continued to attract cats for at least a couple of days. It's possible that cats, as sit-and-wait hunters, use the scent marks to see whether they will attract other members of the same species that made them. Mice use urine marks to signal to other mice, and the marks contain a great deal of useful information about the mouse that produced them. Thus, the scent marker doesn't put itself at risk so much as other members of the same species that show up to examine the mark. In addition, odours spread out from their sources in ways that are not predictable. We know intuitively that light travels in straight lines but not around obstacles, and that sound travels in all directions, including around obstacles. However, because we rely so little on odour to give us directional information, it's not immediately obvious what problems animals face when determining where an odour is emanating from. Of course, odours outdoors are carried by the air, downwind, not upwind, but air movements close to the ground where cats operate are usually highly complex. While the wind may be blowing in a consistent direction a few yards above the ground, friction caused by its contact with the ground, and especially with vegetation, causes it to break up into eddies of various sizes. These carry pockets of odour away from the source so that a cat somewhere downwind of a mouse's nest will get intermittent bursts of mouse smell. Tracking these bursts to their source, especially in thick cover, is likely to require diligent searching and possibly some backtracking. Once a cat has located a source of mouse odour, it is potentially able to use the fact that odours don't travel upwind to position itself downwind of the odour source so its own smell can't be detected by the mouse, and then wait for mice to turn up. While sit and wait is a well-documented feline hunting method, we do not know whether cats routinely prefer patrolling the downwind sides of, for example, hedgerows, to avoid their own scent betraying their presence. However, it seems likely that a predator as smart as a cat could quickly learn this tactic, even if it is not instinctive. Cats possess a second olfactory apparatus which humans lack, the vomeronasal organ, VNO, also called the Jacobson's organ. A pair of tubes, the nasopalatine canals, run from the roof of the cat's mouth, just behind the upper incisors, up to the nostrils. Connected roughly halfway up each one of these tubes is a sac, the VNO itself, filled with chemical receptors. Unlike the nose, the entire VNO is full of fluid, so odors must be dissolved in saliva before they can be detected. Moreover, the ducts connecting the VNOs to the canals are only about 1/100 of an inch wide, so thin that the odors must be pumped in and out of the sacs by a dedicated set of tiny muscles. This gives the cat precise control over when it uses the VNO, unlike the nose, which automatically receives odor every time the cat breathes. Thus, the VNO's function lies somewhere between our senses of smell and taste. Appreciating how cats make use of this faculty requires a great leap of imagination. Cats, unlike dogs, perform an obvious facial contortion when bringing the VNO into play. They pull their top lip upward slightly, uncovering the top teeth, while the mouth is held partially open. This pose is usually held for several seconds. It's sometimes known as the gape response, although it's usually referred to by its German name, Flemen. Researchers theorize that during this pose, the tongue is squeezing saliva up into the canals from where the pumping mechanism delivers it to the VNO. Cats perform Flemen exclusively in social situations, so by implication they must use their VNO to detect the smells of other cats. Footnote: whereas mammals seem to use their VNOs exclusively for social and especially sexual functions, reptiles use them more diversely. Snakes use their forked tongues, which do not have taste buds, to deliver different samples of odorants to their left and right VNOs, useful when they are tracking prey or a snake of the opposite sex. End of note. Male cats perform it after sniffing urine marks left by females, including during courtship, and female cats will do the same toward urine marks left by tomcats, although usually only if the tom is not present. The cat's VNO can probably detect and analyze a wide range of smells, since it contains at least 30 different kinds of receptors, more than the dog's, which has only 9. These receptors are distinct from those found in the nose and are connected to their own dedicated area of the brain, known as the accessory olfactory bulb. Why do cats, and indeed in most mammals apart from primates, need 2 olfactory systems? The answer seems to change from species to species. Mice have highly sophisticated VNOs with several hundred receptor types and 2 distinct connections to the accessory olfactory bulb rather than the cat's 1. The odorants mice pick up regulate reproduction as well as enabling recognition of every other mouse in the neighborhood from its unique odor fingerprint. In many species, some odor communication takes place through the VNO and some through the nose. For example, in rabbits, chemical communication between adults involves the VNO, but the scent emanating from the mother that stimulates her kits to suckle is picked up by their noses. Sometimes the balance between the two changes as the animal matures. The VNO and the nose are used in tandem during a guinea pig's first breeding season, but the following year its nose alone will suffice. Although cats have not been studied in this amount of detail, it's feasible that they also interpret olfactory information in a flexible way. If we accept that the VNO is primarily designed to analyze odors coming from other members of the same species, then the fact that dogs are generally more sociable than cats doesn't really fit the fact that their VNOs are less discriminating. Dogs descended from social ancestors conduct much of their relationships with other dogs face-to-face and thus use visual cues to confirm who another dog is and what it is likely to do next, so their VNOs may not be required very often. The domestic cat's solitary ancestors only rarely had the opportunity to meet one another. The exceptions are males when they are courting females and females interacting with their litters for a few months. In the wild, much of the social life of cats must be conducted through scent marks, which can be deposited for another cat to sniff days, sometimes weeks later. Since wildcats rarely get to meet other members of their own species, any information they can pick up from scent marks is crucial for making decisions on how to act when they do encounter each other. Most critically, for the survival of her offspring, a female cat must assess her various male suitors who themselves have been attracted by the change in her own scent as she comes into season. She may already have gained useful information about each of them by sniffing the scent marks they have left as they roamed through her territory, information she can use to supplement what she can see of their condition and behavior when she finally meets them. She may also be able to distinguish those that are unrelated to her from those that are, perhaps a son who has roamed away and then happened to return to the area a few years later, thereby avoiding inbreeding. Scientists have not yet studied any of these possibilities in cats, but we know them to occur in other species. Cats' sense of smell has evolved not purely for hunting, but also for social purposes. Successful hunting was, until domestication, crucial to the survival of every individual cat. However, it cannot in itself ensure the survival of an individual cat's genes. That also requires an effective mating strategy. Each female cat tries to select the best male for her purposes every time she mates to ensure that her genes pass down to successive generations. Ideally, she should take a long-term view, trying to gauge not only how likely her own offspring are to survive, but also how successful they are likely to be when they in turn become old enough to breed. If she picks the strongest and healthiest males to mate with, then her male kittens are likely to be strong and healthy also when they are old enough to mate. She will, of course, be able to make a judgment based on her suitor's appearance, but she may be able to obtain a better idea of how healthy they are based on their odor. Her sense of smell may thus provide her with extra information to make these crucial mating decisions. Cats perceive most of the scents that have social meaning using the nose and the VNO in tandem. Studies of other species suggest that while both may be needed the first time a particular type of smell is encountered, for example, the first time a young male detects a female in estrus, on subsequent occasions either one will do the job, the brain presumably filling in the missing input. Like dogs, cats pay a great deal of attention to scent marks left by other cats, both those carried in urine and those that they rub onto prominent objects, using the glands around the mouth. To distinguish it from the rubbing that cats perform on people and on one another, which is mainly a tactile display, this is sometimes referred to as bunting, a term whose origins are obscure. Cats' faces have numerous scent-producing glands, one under the chin, one at each corner of the mouth, and one beneath the areas of sparse fur between eye and ear, while the pinna itself produces a characteristic odor. We know little about how cats use these scent marks, but they certainly display an interest in the scents other cats produce. For example, male cats can distinguish between females at different stages in their estrus cycle based on their facial gland secretions alone. Each gland produces a unique blend of chemicals, some of which have even been used in commercial products that can have a positive effect on reducing stress in anxious cats. Apart from the social role of the VNO, and to a lesser extent the nose, all the cat's other senses are exquisitely tuned to the hunting lifestyle of their ancestors. They have quite an arsenal at their disposal. They can locate prey visually, their eyes effective in the half-light of early dawn and late dusk, orally detecting high-pitched squeaks and rustles, or olfactorily through detecting the odours that rodents leave in scent marks. As they approach their prey, cats' exquisite sense of balance and the sensory hairs on their cheeks and elbows allow them to do so silently and stealthily. As they pounce, the whiskers on their faces sweep forward to act as a short-range radar, guiding the mouth and teeth to precisely the right place to deliver the killing bite. Cats evolved as hunters, something domestication has done little to change. What the cat senses is only half the story. Their brains have to make sense of the vast amounts of information that their eyes, ears, balance organs, noses, and whiskers produce, and then turn that information into action, whether correcting the cat's balance as it tiptoes along the top of a fence, deciding on the precise moment to pounce on a mouse, or checking the yard for the scent of cats that have visited during the night. The sheer volume of data that each sense organ generates has to be filtered every waking second. An analogy might be the vast banks of TV screens and monitors at NASA headquarters during the launch of a spacecraft. At any one moment, only a minute fraction of what they display is important, and it takes a highly trained observer to know which ones to watch and which can safely be ignored. Unfortunately, at present, we know much less about how sensory information is processed than how it is generated. The size and organization of the cat's brain can give us some clues as to their priorities in life. The basic form of the felid brain, as shown by the shape of the skull, evolved at least 5 million years ago. Some parts of the brain, especially the cerebellum, are disproportionately geared to processing information relating to balance and movement, reflecting cats' prowess as athletes. While this is apparently contradicted by the occasions that cats get stuck up trees, the problem here is not their intelligence or their sense of balance, but rather that their claws all face forward, so they cannot be used as brakes when descending. The part of the cortex that deals with hearing is well developed. So too, as we have seen, are the olfactory bulbs. In cats, the parts of the brain that seem to be important in regulating social interactions are also less well developed than they are in the most social members of the carnivora, such as the wolf and the African hunting dog. This is unsurprising, given the solitary lifestyle of the domestic cat's immediate ancestors. Nevertheless, domestic cats are remarkably adaptable in their social arrangements. Some form deep attachments with people, and others remain in a colony with other cats for their entire lives, their only interactions with humans consisting of running away and hiding. Once made, these choices cannot be reversed, since they are set during socialization. The cat, as a species, can adapt to a number of social environments, but individual cats generally cannot. This lack of flexibility must ultimately lie in the way that their brains are constructed, and in particular, the parts of their brains that process social information. Science has yet to unravel the factors that lie behind these constraints, so that today's cats have limited options when faced with changes in their social milieu. Catnip and other stimulants. Scientists do not yet understand why cats respond to catnip, a traditional constituent of cat toys. Not all cats respond to it. A single gene governs whether or not the cat responds, and in many cats, perhaps as many as 1 in 3, both copies of this gene are defective, with no apparent effect on behavior or general health. The behavior released by catnip is a bizarre mixture of play, feeding, and female sexual behavior, whether the cat itself is male or female. Cats may first play with a catnip toy as if they think it is a small item of prey, but they quickly switch into bouts of a seemingly ecstatic combination of face rubbing and body rolling, reminiscent of a female cat in season. Most cats also drool and attempt to lick the catnip. This behavior may continue for several minutes at a time until the cat eventually recovers and walks away. But if the toy is left where it is, the cat may repeat the whole sequence, albeit with less intensity, 20 or 30 minutes later. A few other plants elicit the same response, notably the Japanese cat shrub or silver vine, and the roots of the kiwi fruit vine, which, despite its name, originated in southern China. In the 1970s, the first growers of kiwi vines in France learned this when they found, to their distress, that cats had excavated and chewed their seedlings. All three plants contain similar fragrant chemicals, thought to be responsible for the cats' responses. By some accident of evolution, these chemicals likely stimulate the cat's nose to trigger circuits in the brain that would never normally be activated at the same time, somehow bypassing the normal mechanisms that ensure that cats don't perform two incompatible actions at once. A cat in the throes of catnip-induced oblivion would seem vulnerable to attack, and since cats presumably don't get any lasting benefit from their experience, evolution should have weeded out the gene responsible. Most species in the cat family, from lions to domestic cats, respond to these plants the same way, so the gene must have evolved several million years ago. Why it did so remains a mystery.